So when I first met you, I was thinking back at 2005, 2006. I had trained you in a leadership course. You were with the USTA. I moved to California in the 2008, 2009, and I said, "Hey, can I come and see what you do?" I had no idea. So it is, what is tennis? I didn't even know what the scoring was. But I knew people, and I thought, okay, so I know people. And I remember you on the court and just asking me, so what could I do? And I'm thinking, gosh, I don't know tennis, but I know people. Look at their body language, get into the mindset. And then when you were working with the little kids, it was giving feedback. Do you remember that? And they were high-fiving each other, and they were talking about what they were doing well and what they can improve on. And then you went in from the USTA, and you had the opportunity to work for TCU. And I remember a conversation. We were at Rose Cafe Bakery in Newport Beach, and you're like, "This is so big for me. I'm so out of my comfort zone, but this is my dream." And I said, "David, coaches need coaches too. Let me come alongside you." And I started coaching you within that whole mindset, that time frame. And I didn't know tennis, but I knew people. So as you went into the 2010 and then the 2011 season, because you started September 2010, and then to watch, and then I got to work, Eric, and I got to work with your team from 2011 on, and to see you go from not being ranked, well, you were ranked in the 50s, and then there was not being ranked, and then you went all the way into having a top 10 ranking, and this year would have been 6 years in a row. You made it to the Sweet 16 5 years in a row. You won back-to-back Big 12 championships from someone who had never done, the program. You took it to a complete different level. And I know that your passion is mindset. And we've talked about like the so what, now what. So when you think back over your life through when you were a child, because I still remember your mom told me there was a time when you were in Mexico, because you were born and raised in Mexico, and you loved tennis and you were hurt and you were on your bed and you would just sit there and you would play, you'd take that racket, you hit that ball against the wall all day long. And you had to get really good at hitting in a certain place because you can get off the bed. So even as a child, mindset was so important. So when you think about mindset within just your journey in life, how has that served you? And are you by normally a growth mindset person, or are you more of the fixed stuck mindset person?
That's a great question. Thank you for having me. I'm honored that you would ask, Mary. Hello to everybody out there. I really thought the poll would say I just have absolutely nothing else to do today, so this is all I got. But I appreciate you at least making me feel better. That's a great question. I ask myself that all the time. Am I growth or am I results oriented? I don't know. I go back and forth. I'm very competitive and I do like seeing results. So that's what makes me think that I'm results oriented. I do believe in the whole process and that mindset is better. And I don't know. You can ask Devin Ball when he works with me. I know he's a master at it. So compared to him, I'm not good at a lot of things. But I definitely get more fired up and more in my element on game day than I am on your regular practice day. So as far as what do I prefer, I love game days. So I would say that that's sort of part of my strengths is being ready for game day. Growing up, I just feel my life has gone so many directions and I've had so many people help me. When you kept saying you did this, it took a group of people, administration, everybody at TCU, everybody supporting, took a lot. Players, number one, and you get good players, all of a sudden you're a good coach. So it was a whole process for us to go from where we were in 2010 to where we are now. So what I guess what I want to say is that I know how much it's taken for me to be where I am with the people, that it'd be hard to focus on the negative and when we have a bad day, it's really easy to focus on that, but I guess just being grateful that we even have an opportunity to do whatever. I always, maybe it's growing up in Mexico, maybe it's growing up with not everything given to me, or, you know, middle class, normal, that makes you appreciate other things. And also, I had friends that had absolutely nothing. So I always feel like things can be worse, and also feel like things can get better. So it's like, which one am I going to focus on?
You know, when you talk about, so there, you said something, you said, you know, it's easy coaching, or great coaches have great players. But at the same time, I challenge, and I've always challenged you on that, because you can be a great coach and still not have players that might have not have the skill, but they have the drive. They have this, it's the mindset. It is the, man, they're so hungry. You talk about a growth mindset. It is someone who is willing that no matter what happens, they fall down, they get back up. They fall down, they get back up. They look for ways to do it. And there was a kid that still sticks out in my mind. I remember when I was working with the team, and I was in your office, and we were on lunch break, and there was a kid who wanted so badly to come and play for you. And he was bound down by the Mexico border in Texas. And I think it was a bus he took, a cab. And he did, do you remember who I'm talking about? He [S2] Yeah. [S1] Showed up at your office, and he was just like, Coach, what do I need to do? What can I do to play for you? And it was, you go, that's what I love. It's the hunger. And no matter if they're good enough for what you're looking for or not, it's, that's the growth mindset. Because there's a saying that, you know, it's the mindset that trumps talent. It's the belief system. So you can have talent all day long, but if they don't have the belief system, if they don't have a mindset to grow, to learn, to shift, to pivot, they will never be the type of player that they could truly be.
Well, there's no doubt about that. And as you were talking, a few players came into mind where it was all about their attitude. Some guys that we took a chance on, that on paper, they weren't very good. Even on practice day, they weren't very good. And they just, because of their attitude and their mindset, and that hunger, they became extremely critical in our success. And maybe a little bit of the opposite too, where on paper they look great, but because of that, they weren't. So there's no doubt, it'd be amazing if you could actually test for that or recruit it perfectly, because that, at the end of the day, that's what you need. And Devin and I, my co-coach, that's the last question we ask each other is this, you know, he calls it a dog. Is he a dog? Is he a true, truly, truly a dog where when things get tough, we can count on him? And that's, if the answer is yes, and we do everything we can. If it's not, we go the other way.
I really believe that we become who we surround ourselves with. And so the mind of a great coach, whether it's a coach of a athletic team, if it's a leader of a business unit, you know, an owner of a company, whether it's the mom or dad of your family, when you surround yourself with people who believe like you believe, when you know your values, when you know what you want, you can create that. And I remember there were times where we'd sit down and go, okay, so what do you stand for? What do you want this program to look like? And then how do you pick players that have be a dog mindset? Because as soon as you know, nope, this person does not fit this value system, and it doesn't mean that it's right or wrong, it's just, it's not a good fit for you. And I believe that's a fantastic message just for people out in life in general. Like when you're hiring, when you're looking at who you surround yourself, does this person align with my value, with my mindset, with my drive?
No doubt. And somebody asked if dog stand for something. And no, the animal. Devin's a big fan of dogs, and he thinks very highly of dogs. If there was a god, he would be some kind of dog. And you know, there's certain attributes about dogs that are, you know, that are great for competition. So No, it doesn't stand for anything, just an animal. Yeah, no, you know, every time that we sort of went against that sort of that gut feeling or what I said, you know, I can change my coaching style and be more a certain way so that I can be a better coach for these personalities or this certain type of person. It's not easy. It's not easy. It doesn't necessarily, they're not transferring, but I know it's just not that easy. It's hard. It's hard to not be able to work with what you feel is sort of the right attributes or what's going to take us. And Devin and I, we're very similar in a lot of ways. We're very opposite in a lot, but when it comes to competition and what it takes out there, definitely the attitude and the mindset is as important as anything else.
So you talk about attitude and mindset. One thing that I know about you is that when I say you are a thought leader within the tennis world, you have the Roditi rule out there, and we'll get into that in a minute. Yet, what I've known about you from the get-go, from the day I met you, is that you're always looking for ways that you can improve, that you can do something different. You like to think outside of the box. And just to give the viewers a snapshot about how Roditi works, I have a video to share. So bear with me.
Okay, this could be interesting.
Here's back, guys. It's back. It's back, guys. Keep your hands in. Okay. Hands in.
Okay, I'm falling. Go when you're ready.
I'm falling.
So you remember that?
Yeah, of course. Yes.
So, in true Roditi fashion, you want to do things differently. You're the ones like, you don't want to do the same old, same old. So we were doing a trust fall with your team and you're like, okay, I only want two people to catch me. And we're like, no, that's not safe. We have to stay within the safe confines of this process. And you're like, well, then I want to fall forward. And we had never done a process like that where someone falls forward. And it was, no, I trust my team so much that I know that they have me. And I want to prove to them that I trust them. You are one that just shows a piece of who you are. But you talk about the Roditi rule, bringing the passion back into the tennis world. It's that staunch, well, you can talk to more because when the very first time I ever did a process with you, you had to tell me what a fault line and what a double fault line was because I had no idea. So for the viewers who don't know tennis, what was normal and what did the Roditi rule create?
Well, we came from a very, very humble mentality of, if we really truly want more fans to come to tennis, we got to make it more, I guess, streamlined or more like the other sports. There's a lot of, for tennis players, it makes sense, you know, somebody's playing a point, don't make any noise so they can focus. But if you think about it outside of that, growing up in tennis or golf, every sport, people are just being themselves and they're talking and they can do whatever they want and the players still play. So in order to get more fans, my suggestion along with other coaches was just let the fans behave the same way that they would behave in a basketball game or a football game or a baseball game, volleyball game, where they can talk, they can make comments in the middle of the mat, in the middle of the point. And just like the other sports, and this is a part that wasn't clear for some people, that you still can't use profanity or get personal, be racist or homophobic comments or what, nothing physical about the person. Just like any other sport, if I'm at a basketball game and I start yelling racist comments, I should get kicked out. So same thing. But it was a very out of the box thought. The more I talked about it, the more I believed it. And at least I wanted to see it. Let's try it. We don't know what's going to be like. Let's try it first and see how it goes. And so our conference, the Big 12, the coaches are like, yeah, let's try it, which was awesome. And we did it. And I say for 95% of the time or 98%, it worked. We had the best crowds that year. And
you had like 2,000, over 2,000 people in attendance, right?
Yes, we did. And they had a great time. And they wanted to come back. And we actually started getting some kind of like fan club type thing, like a true fan club. And there was a match at the time that year. Two schools in our conference were number one and number two in the nation. And I don't want to use comments because, I mean, names, because it doesn't really matter. Other than the crowd for their match, it was number one against number two in the nation. The crowd got so big, they couldn't really control the crowd. They weren't prepared, or they weren't used to having to control. So you didn't know if what they were saying to the players was personal or not. And so they decided to lower the rule a little bit, which if I had been the commissioner of the Big 12, I would have said the rule is not the problem. The problem was managing the rule because our crowd was so big. Let's work on that part instead of working on the rule. Let's just make sure that there are two or three volunteers on every court that can kick you out if they want to kick you out. I don't know. It's not that hard. I don't think it's that hard. But anyways, I'm not the commissioner. So, but it was great. But it was definitely, I mean, it made national news. Professional tennis players talked about it. I believe Andy Murray commented and said, you know what? Yeah, that would make our sport better if people were a little more, were having more fun.
Well, and so when I look at your willingness to think outside the box and the very first conversation is like, how do I get more people there? Like, what can I do? And I said, well, what can you do? And first it was like you were taking budget money and you were going to do free ice cream, and then it was free pizzas, and then I got to free margaritas, right, for the staff and alumni that, over 21.
I don't know anything about that.
But it's bringing fun back into what we do. And that's with anything in life. When we can think outside the box, when we can look at what we have and maybe what it is that we don't have, and we know that there's something missing, we have to be willing to ask ourselves, well, what else can I do? If I've never seen this before, we're in a pandemic, people are stuck, they've never seen this before. And so many people, our businesses are shut down, we're staying at home, we don't get to do the things that we like, and we have to think different thoughts. And in order to think different thoughts, like you, it's learning how to have a different mindset, which leads into, when you're stuck, how do you get unstuck?
Well, I call you, number one.
Well, that's true.
That's usually what I do. And the message is always the same. It's what I've learned from being around you. Number one, I would say you got to have that person or people that you trust, that you respect, that know you, that truly know you, and that you're able to share, because I can't imagine a human being not needing that somewhere or another. I'm lucky to have you, and the message is always, it's sort of work backwards. What do you want, and then what do you enjoy? It's always about doing things that I enjoy, that are healthy, that are going to get me in that path. But it's not like a punishment or a chore or anything. It's the opposite. It's doing things that fit with who you are, that bring joy into your life, and then little by little, next thing you know, it's just different. It's just different. Everything is different. Probably a nicer person to be around or whatever. And it's all about doing things that you enjoy. That's definitely what I learned. And I told you the story with my 5-year-old today. told him I had to do some yard work. And he's like, why are you doing yard work? You're not getting paid for it. And I said, well, the house gotta look good. He's like, oh, Dad, come on, let's just have fun. Let's have fun and do something that it's gonna make you happy. And I said, well, you know, a nice house will make me happy too. So, but it was so simple, but it's hard. It's hard to get there. And that's why I think it's good to have someone that you can talk to that knows. But I definitely, we have changed seasons just by changing that. Instead of, you know, when things go wrong, you want to maybe work harder or do more or sort of put the hammer down. And it, a lot of times it's the opposite, is get away from whatever and go on and do something that truly brings joy in who you are. And it's worked a lot.
Well, and one of your strengths is, it's like you have this passion and you have, it's your strength and you bring fun. Our greatest strength becomes our greatest weakness. So there's a part where you're just passionate and you're fire and you're fun and you're play. And then sometimes it's like figuring out the pendulum swing, right? And when you look at the best times, the best seasons you had, were you in your element? Were you able to have some fun? Were you able to be passionate with your players?
Absolutely. And I'm lucky also that someone like Devin, who's, when it comes to that, he levels me out big time. And he's very wise in so many ways. So I have someone that's working with me that knows me very well. And we have that, he's one of my best friends, if not my best friend. And he knows me very well. And he can, when he talks to me, you know, when you have those talks, I know where he's coming from, and I know he knows me. So I'm also lacking that way, that I have somebody immediately that can tell. But it's definitely about bringing the joy as much as we can on a daily basis, especially with our guys. You know, it's all about the guys, and they feed off of us. You've told me, I had my ex-wife one time, she called me out. She's like, well, you talk to your guys about their body language, look at your body language. So anyway, so 100%, that's where Devin and I are sort of constantly balancing each other. If it was up to me, we'd be doing a fun day every day, or a non-tennis, let's go play soccer, let's go paintballing, let's go do something every week. He's more the, no, we got to practice more. Or not more. He would be mad if I said that. I'm better or more focused. So we balance each other, but it's at the end of the day is, we know that if our guys are enjoying and they're looking forward to coming to the office, which is our tennis court, that we're going to get a lot more out of them. And there are days where you want to lay into them, but it's just not going to work. So it's always a guess of, do they need a hug or do they need a kick in the butt?
So a little behind the scenes, because you talked about paintballing, and we have some tremendous memories about paintballing. And you've talked about the grit and the grind, you know, bringing it to the courts. You have one of your players, Cam Norrie, he's on the ATP Tour, high-ranked, amazing guy. And the paintballing experience, that guy is actually his coach now. So you've created this incredible, you know, not just what you do in creating teams, but creating these amazing guys who are out there chasing their dreams. And so I'd actually asked a couple people to come in and to be surprise guests to help us see behind the scenes what it looks like in Roditi world, teaching mindset, some of the how do you get unstuck. And so if you give me just a moment here. Faku!
Hey, what's up? Coach, how are you?
How are you, Faku? How are you doing?
Good. Day 40 inside already.
Yeah, I can see that. You're a lot darker than I remember you.
I think it's just the light. Let me turn on the lights.
Yeah, you need a little more lighting. You're not.
No, well, the things, I had to come to the room because.
Sorry!
How's it going, guys? Good?
Not good. So,
how are you?
Cameron.
So when I asked you to speak, Eric and I were talking about how do we create this even more engaging, knowing, you know, Roditi, you're an amazing guy, and yet this isn't the, I mean, you like to talk, yet you don't like to talk about yourself. And to give some behind the scenes, you know, stories and things of how they've, that you've impacted them, because when I talk about, just first and foremost, Paku, I've known you for, well, we got to work with you three seasons,
eight,
I think.
Eight. Yeah.
And a love-hate relationship with Eric.
Yeah.
Between the ropes with the blindfold process and then the paintball.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. Yeah. Well, what do you want me to tell the story or?
Sure.
It was, so basically we're playing, I think Cam wasn't there yet because he was my first year, I think.
I wasn't there, no.
And we were paintballing, it was raining like nonstop. So it's been a pretty good day. I remember by the end, we had to give a speech for the whole team. And then you would turn around and the whole team would vote. And I think Eric will either go like this or like this, and then the whole team will shoot you. And I couldn't pass. It took me like, I was just getting shot nonstop, just one after another. And I remember like the toughest part for me was, I think it was supposed to be a minute going all out. And it's just my English was very bad at the time. Like I barely spoke English. So I just couldn't get through 30 seconds, 40 seconds. And he got pretty heated. And I remember looking at Rodin and I was just ready to throw it down. You know, no problem for me. But it was my first trip with the team. And I was like, maybe I have to go home after this, you know. after 3 weeks in the US, I have to go home. And then it's like, what do I tell my parents? And I don't know how I just got through it and I didn't overreact and I got it done. But yeah, it was a good story and kind of what we needed, I guess. That was the whole point of doing that.
Well, and taking that piece, you know, so Coach talks about mindset, getting unstuck, and he's so willing to think outside the box and bringing us in, getting us to do crazy things, paintball gone bad. Well, it was good.
Yeah, I know. Maybe you do that to another athlete, coach, and get in big trouble. I don't know.
Yeah, well, he did. But
if that would happen to another athlete, maybe, you never know. Today, things are pretty crazy. You know, you go tell the AD, you're getting shot nonstop.
Eric says your speech was pretty pathetic, though.
Well, yeah, ask him to do a speech in Spanish, see how it goes.
Laughing.
Don't bite on that. Don't bite. He's trying to get
I'm just staying.
But you talk about mindset, right? And you're in front of the firing squad. And Cam didn't have the firing squad, but you still got to do something in a different way to where you're laying it all on the line. And to have a coach who believes in thinking outside the box, and not just with driven, but with anything to help you guys be better players, look where you're at today. So we would love to just hear from your inside dialogue. You know, what are some of the things that Roditi taught you and how has it helped you become who you are today?
Yeah. Do you want me to start off, Faku?
Yeah.
Yeah, for me, when I first got to TCU, I think I immediately hit it off with Roditi. I mean, I felt there was kind of a sense of similarity between us, and I think it might have been the competitive nature or just the easygoingness, and I just felt kind of quite calm there, and like it was a good place for me, and I think that, yeah, we got on really well, and as a coach, he was phenomenal for me. He was able to kind of look out very quickly and very easily what my weaknesses were. And I think he's good at that. And then not only just picking them out, is having a solution for a lot of the stuff. And it was a good combination having Devin there for me as well, just to kind of get both sides of the kind of spectrum. But he was a phenomenal leader, and I think he really looked after me and all the guys on the team, not only on the court but off the court as well. And he definitely kind of, he's been through it all. He went to TCU as well, so he kind of knows the ins and outs of what's happening on the court and off the court. So he definitely was almost like a little father figure over in the States for me. And
little father figure.
And I think a lot of the guys can say the same thing. I know Gia would agree with me, and he was definitely helpful. And it was not only, it was more actually off the court than on the court for me, and I'd probably say a lot of the other players too. So I think the biggest thing for me, he just gets it, and he understood kind of the lifestyle of the college athletes, and he had a good idea what was going on most of the time. So he could relate, but
I'm not sure.
I learned a lot from him.
Yeah, I'm not sure I wanted to know the full extent of it. Paco, were you going to say something?
For me, similar to what Cam said, my relationship with David was same, kind of like when I got there was the only person who I can like really talk, mainly because of the language barrier and like similar culture. And and I think for that reason, the first 2 years we'll fight a lot and argue, but always with respect. And it was like that father-son relationship where you just go at each other, and then the next day it's all good, and it's always for the best. And then my last 2 years, I was way more mature, and I got the best of him, and in a good way. And I think what I really like about him, he does something similar to the way I was raised by my parents. It's like where the rules are very clear, you know everything, and then he's not gonna bring the hammer down or be controlling you all day. You just know what the rules are, and then it's like it's up to you, like to like do things the right way if you want to, and if you're not, then you're gonna have to basically punish yourself because you know how everything works. And I think that way he creates, I don't know how to say, like a feel of like more trust and confidence. And when you do things the wrong way, you're not mad at him, you're basically mad at you because he told you before, you know. So it's, and I think that's a good way of giving athletes just freedom of kind of like grow on your own a little bit, but he's always there for you. And then I think that's a really good approach for players, rather than just being behind them and controlling them and trying to like do everything for themselves, you know. And then you don't let them grow. I don't know if I'm explaining it the right way, but basically he gives you a lot of freedom, and then he kind of guides you to where you want to go.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And he never held grudges. So if you told the truth and you messed up on something, then you told him what was happening, he would always, obviously he'll be mad at you in that moment, and then the next day is normal.
Yeah, exactly.
Which was, I think, was good. And it allowed everyone to be more honest and more, and kind of do their own thing, like Faku said.
Well, you talk about, Cam, you talked about Roditi, and you also talked about Devin, and David talked a lot about Devin. We are who we surround ourselves with. Our strength, we have our lane, and we stay in that lane. But there are times that we have to have people come alongside of us that we're not good at. And it's, how do I have this person support me working together with the same vision creates this incredible result. And there's so many times I would tell David, stay in your lane. His strength was passion. It is it's the fun, it's the play, but he's so authentic. And that's, you know, for anyone in life, whether you're a business owner, as you're coaching Faku with Cam, when you're on whatever you choose to do, you stay in your lane, you be who you are, you be authentic. And then if you don't have the skill set that someone else, that someone needs, you're willing to bring someone else in. That makes a great leader. It's not that we have to know it all, but we just do our part to the best that we possibly can.
Yeah, I think that's really, really important, especially for coaches, not think that you know everything and you don't need anyone else to help you. I think that once you have the, if you're humble enough to let other coaches or other people help you or go ask questions, because at the end of the day, that's going to make you better, and then your player or your team is going to be better, and that's the ultimate goal, I guess.
You know, if I was going to relate this to business, I know not everybody here is a coach. Here we have two iconic people in our players, ex-players from our program, and very different players, very different people. And Cameron, obviously, he's our flag out there representing. Making it in tennis is so hard to do. Getting to where Cam has gotten and being top 50 in the world is every kid's dream. And I don't know what the percentages are, but they're extremely low. Do you guys know what the percentage is of becoming a top 50 in the world? It's less than 1%. No. I know that. So very, very hard. So anyway, he's sort of this guy out there. And if someone were to ask me, what's the best thing you ever did to help Cameron? It was basically doing less. And I understood that the part that I'm very proud of with Cameron is that understanding who he is as a person and how he ticks, and also it was very obvious to me his relationship with Devin from the very beginning. And I remember consciously making an effort and consistently reminding myself, like, just don't get involved. And there were some things that I would have done differently at the time, and I'm glad I didn't. And I just kept my mouth shut, and I allowed the process and see where that was going. Whereas maybe 20 years ago as a coach, I would have gotten more involved from the beginning. And I mean, I doubt that it would have been better. I doubt it. No, but I don't think so. So it was with Cameron, I took a very sort of side, more of a confidant. I got more involved, like Cameron said, about non-tennis issues, off the court issues. I understood that Cameron, if you made him feel caged in and you tried to macromanage him, he was going to rebel, and it was only going to get worse. So it was allowing him within some parameters to be himself and figure it out on his own and become this professional he has now become on his own, in his own timing, and just kept putting him back in line. And Devin obviously took a huge part, probably some of the toughest decisions we ever made when it came to Cameron. Devin was the one, like, trust me, we got to do this. And we did it, and it worked to send Cameron a message. But it was always just allowing Cameron to be who he is, giving him the freedom to make some mistakes, paying the consequences. He paid every consequence that our number 10 guy on the team would pay, and moving on. So then when he became a professional, who he is today, it was on his terms. And I do believe he benefited a lot from it. So whereas Faku was in some ways more mature, it was interesting what happened with him, with Eric. Faku did get stuck in matches where he was done. He was done. I remember one time in Austin, he had this match. He was playing a player that was not very good, and he was getting killed. And I don't know what I said during the match, but I said, Paku, I don't care whose fault or what you're doing, but if you
you're blind. You told me I was blind.
Yeah.
You put your hat like you're blind.
Anyway, so that was a great exercise for him, and it did show him, that he had the tendency to get stuck. But it's incredible that they're working together today. But it's I would just say that, and I learned this from Jose Higueras, that some of the best leadership or coaching that I've learned is keeping my mouth shut, which is not easy for me, not easy at all. Cameron brought up that I talked about some of his weaknesses. I felt like I really kept my mouth shut. I mean, it's amazing, because if you feel like I told you about your weaknesses, there were a lot of things that I wanted to work on at the time. And it would have been a mistake. It would have been a mistake. It would have been too much too soon. I made that mistake with some other people. And in the recruiting process with Cameron going through the process with Driven for Life with Mary and Eric, at the most critical moment of his speech, those of you that have gone through Bold and you know what I'm talking about, sort of where he's at his most vulnerable, sort of naked being, he said, I am the most competitive, beep person you will ever meet. He used a word that's more used in New Zealand. Here it's not as accepted as it is in New Zealand. But I called him the triple C from that. And the moment he said it, and the way he said it, I thought, okay, we're going to get along just fine, and you're going to win a lot of matches. When he said that, I thought, okay, he's going to win a lot of tennis matches. And I hope Cameron, I hope that's part of who you are, and I don't think you'll ever lose it. I hope not, because that's what made you, so what made
a true
you,
dog.
Yeah, a true dog of dogs.
I do not want to fight for a bun, for a bone. If we were both dogs and there was only one bone, I would not want to go after that bone with you.
Thanks.
But anyways, so that was, we can talk about it all day, but I just, in relating it to leadership in the recruiting process, Cameron is a perfect example of somebody that definitely fits what Devin and I when it comes to competition. And then with Faku is a very kind of different recruiting process. Faku is seriously considering turning pro. And with Cameron, it was just more about dialogue. With Faku, he was also understanding that for him, the less I talked to him in the recruiting process and the more laid back process I would take and kind of make him sort of come to terms on his own to go to college, come to terms, to possibly pick TCU, very chill, very hands-off approach. And there was no doubt, the part that I loved about Faku, there was no doubt that his work ethic, his attitude, and also his mindset, I felt there were a lot of things that he could complain about, and he never did, and it was awesome. It was awesome, and it worked out. It worked out.
Thanks.
I thought it was a slam dunk. Faku reminds me, it wasn't a slam dunk. He was thinking about other dunk. He was thinking about other things. But anyway, so, in hiring for businesses, I think you hire the person and not the skills, and then you go from there.
Yeah. Well, thanks, guys, for getting on here and for being part of this. It was, it's a testament to your coach that you're saying, I'll get up. Cam goes, waking up 10 minutes, right? And I think the world of the two of you, and just thanks again for being part of this.
Yeah, thanks, no worries. Mary. Thanks for having me, Mary.
Absolutely.
Thanks for having us. Bye, thank coach.
You, Thank you. See you, coach. See you, fuck it.
Bye, Nels.
See ya.
That's pretty cool, huh?
That was very cool. Nice surprise. I was not expecting that.
The And I look at just all of your players, the players that we got to know, and you hire, you pick for what suits you. And you made the comment, you hire for the mindset, right? There's a book that I read a long time ago, and it talked about the tingle or the technical. And the technical, it's the skill set, it's the ability. But if they don't have the tingle, which is the passion, and they just have the technical, they typically aren't growth mindset. You get stuck with just this piece because they get into this is the way I'm going to do it, this is how I'm going to do it, and they just go through the routine. When you have the tingle, you have the passion, you have people that really want to learn and grow and develop, you can help them develop that technical side. And of course, when you have the tingle and the technical together, it's golden. And as people come on, I actually want to refer to this book. You talked about Atomic Habits. And there's this piece in here that says, the purpose of setting goals is to win the game. The purpose of building a system is to continue playing the game. And when I look at whether it's in sports, whether it is in business, if our focus is constantly goal-driven, we're only looking at the game. We don't create the system underneath. And that's what, you know, Cam was referring to and alluding to. It's what you do day to day. Because when you get into the match, when you get into the time that it truly counts, if you have the system in place, then it's easy. And when you talk about for you, you love the game, you love game day, you love match day, it's because the system is already in place. What can I do 1% today to become the person that I want to be in the process?
Yeah, and what I would say to that, Mary, is that I believe that I'm, as a player, practice day was not my favorite. That was not where my strength lied. But Devin's was. And I think also, if somebody said, you have to pick the best thing you've ever done that's changed the program, having Devin join in or hiring him or whatever, teaming up with him is one of them. And you know this, Mary, you know, it hasn't always been easy. I've had 3 assistant coaches, none of them younger than me, which is interesting. I think very interesting. Not that I'm not that old, but they're all older than me. And Devin, I felt like he was an expert and the best at what I feel I wasn't good at. And so in partnering and hiring, I think it's critical that you have the humility and the just the courage, have the courage to not be the smartest guy in the room or not be the best at everything in the room, that you hire people that are better than you. And I mean, it's hard to say that with Devin. I don't see him at all as he's supposed to be the assistant, I'm the head coach, but it's not at all. I hope, and I would hope that Devin, if he was here, he would say not at all. We work together. And he is an expert at what I'm not good at. So I do, the only part that I do take credit is that I did make that decision. And I adjusted, and you know this, Mary, I adjusted a lot. Yeah. Who I was, not who I was. I had to reshift my whole role with the team because of Devin, but it's because what his strengths are. So, and that was, you know, I went too far, then I brought it back in, and I'm always kind of juggling that whole relationship. It's a very interesting dynamic with Devin and I. But it's worked. It's worked. And I do give myself a lot of credit for making that work. And Devin, he's put up with a lot as well.
Well, of course, putting up with you.
Yes, seriously, 100%.
So becoming the person that you want to be in the process, you know, of adversity, of maybe not getting the results that you want, but having that mindset and that tenacity, being that dog going after being hungry. What is a 1%? So we have athletes here on the call. We have people who are stuck, people just like, what can I do? What's what would be your message to do 1% today to help you be better tomorrow? In relation to growth, in relation to mindset, in relation to working out?
So I believe in sustainability. I believe that I don't think there's anything that you can do like immediately that's gonna shift, but it can turn the direction that you're moving. So I love working backwards. I love thinking of what is it that you wanna change or shift, or where do you wanna be, and then again, Devin's incredible at it. It's not gonna be perfect, it's not gonna be the ideal, but it's just doing something for even 2 minutes, 1 minute, 2 minutes, whatever it is, and just shifting, and then the next day you do a minute or 30 seconds, I think it's sort of shifting and changing who you want to become, and I don't believe that if you're doing something that is not sustainable, you're doing something that is not enjoyable, that is not who you are, it's not gonna stick. So it's picking, obviously the obvious one is working out or eating habits, and maybe one little decision today, it's like, all right, today I'm gonna, instead of chips, I'm gonna have carrots, whatever. Just that simple. And maybe tomorrow you'll do the same, and worrying about today without thinking that you have to be perfect for the next 30 days or the next 60 days or the next 90 days, because the day you break it, then it's over, but yet you were doing great. You were in the right direction. So I do believe that some of the most successful changes have been very, very small, tiny little adjustments that can lead to another adjustment and get you in the right direction. I think that's what, if I was a coach and I had somebody in front of me, that's what I would think of, that one little thing that can just maybe move it a little bit.
Consistency. But so when you talk about, the little things, but if you fall down, it's the so what, now what mentality. And so many times we do little things and we don't get the results that we want, and then we fall down, and then we're like, see, there we go. And we give up on ourselves, and we go into a growth mindset or a fixed mindset. That's the fixed mindset, where we make excuses, we shut down, and we're reluctant to re-engage. And the thing that I appreciate about you, and I know that all time in life we have, sometimes we operate in a growth, sometimes we operate in fixed, because that's just human nature, but it's the awareness to switch, and it's to go, all right, there I am. I just saw that I'm making an excuse. I just saw that I fell down. How passionate am I about this? If I'm not getting paid to go dig worms, but it's value that I get to go fishing with my boys, and it's what I love. It's the so what now. Get back up. Go back after those dreams. And just because you were going into another amazing season. Your team won 9 in a row, and it just quit. Like, it stopped. And that's where so many other people are. It's the shift. It's the, okay, so what? So what now? What are we going to focus on today?
I loved last week listening to Brad Davidson. He talked about forgiving yourself, and I think it's critical. We have to, because we're gonna make so many mistakes. I make them all the time, and I know that most people do. And also, when he talked about not being alone, we're not alone. What we're going through, there are a lot of people out there that are going through the same thing. So just kind of finding those things, it helps me to know that I'm not alone, that I can call whoever it is, that I can talk to somebody. Also that it's okay. You'd be surprised when you bring something up and like, yep, I struggle with the same thing. It's nice. And then also to forgive ourselves. It's, so you were perfect for 3 days and then you fell backwards. Okay, can you make it another 3 days next?
So I have a question here, and it they want to know, who are mentally the toughest players you have ever coached, TCU or otherwise?
Wow. That is a really good question. I read it earlier, and I'm like, wow, that is very, very tough. You know, we've been lucky to work, I would consider the level that we're at in college, very elite, basically top 200 to 300 in the world, 150. When Cameron is in that mode, he's ridiculously tough. When he decides that nothing will come between him and winning that match, I'd be scared to know what he would be willing to do for him to accomplish that. He is as tough as he gets, and he will suffer as much as he needs to suffer to get to that. And I'm not saying that because he was on. I think Facundo, in some ways, Facundo literally, he suffered every physically. He has an ankle that would hurt every single time he played, and he did it for his whole life. So I think that made him ridiculously tough. It's that he couldn't walk the next day after he played every single time for his whole life. I mean, that's a lot. And he was playing at a ridiculously high level. That made him very tough. I think Devin Bowen, just working with him, you know, for him to be a professional tennis player, he hung in there longer than most people would have. To spend New Year's Eve in India at the very lowest of lowest level 3 years in a row, that's pretty tough to do. So, I think you can be tough in different ways. I think you can. I think if you're going to be, or if you are sort of in a leadership role, it's critical that you know what that area is of your players and where they shine and where your employees shine, and put them in that situation. And I learned this from Mary. I had this player that we were constantly fighting, and Mary finally said, Mary's like, you guys are two little kids. It's a whatever fight. It's one of those types of fights that you're having. And I'm like, really? He's like, yeah, you're just two little kids. It's you and him, you know, just fighting who's going to be right, I guess. And she's like, just let him be the man. Let him be the guy. And it was ridiculous how that shift happened. And all I had to do, I didn't know this was what was going on, took a professional to tell me, but just allowed him to be the whatever, the alpha dog of the group. Just let him be the alpha dog, and he literally never lost after that. So anyways, I can talk forever, but I would say Cameron would be right up there.
Okay. So knowing this, it's actually 12:32, and just bringing your thoughts, leaving the rest of the people who are on in a snapshot, if you can get a message out, what would your message be right now to provide hope, to provide ideas in where people are right now to help them move forward?
I would say be good to yourself, number one. Be your number one cheerleader with yourself. Forgive yourself. And know that it's that you're not going to be perfect, and it's not going to be just one little change can make a big difference in 2 years from now or 3 years from now.
Okay. And I actually just saw that there's actually three hands that rose. So I am going to, Orlando. Hey.
Hey, Mary.
How are you?
Good. How are you, Coach?
I'm good.
Hey, Orlando.
Thanks for having me out here.
Thanks for being on.
Hey, Well, I just wanted to make a comment and kind of bring one thing up that I learned from Coach all these years. First, as his player, and then as a friend. One thing that I think it kind of helped me, and it's been one of the biggest things I've learned from him, it's been having no regrets. No matter what you do, every time you step on a court, practice, a match, whatever you do, just once you get out, you have no regrets. You give it all out, win or lose, you're out there. And once you get out, if you give it all, you're gonna be happy. He was gonna be happy. It's like, hey, you know what? They were better than us today. But we definitely left it all on the court. And I think that, you know, at that time when I was a player, that was it. You know, it was tennis matches and it was competing. But now life is different. And now we're in the real world. And it shows how much that actually means and how much you actually use that. You know, for Cameron, he's still on the court, you know, and for him, it's still like every time you step on a tennis court, you better leave it all out. But for me now, it's just, okay, making decisions in life. Okay, I want something with my life. I want to accomplish something. Okay, do whatever it takes to make sure that 10 years from now, you're not going to have a regret and you're not going to say to yourself, hey, you know, I wish that 10 years ago, I would have made that decision. Or I wish that 10 years ago, I would have, you know, taken that job offer or quit my job and go do something else because I wasn't enjoying what I was doing. So, you know, I think like what he says, you know, having fun and making sure you enjoy what you're doing and having no regrets, it's been one of the biggest things that I've learned from Coach all these years.
It's awesome. Thanks.
No, no problem.
So good to see you.
You too. Take care. Be safe.
You too.
Gracias, Orlando.
All right, Coach.
All right, Faku has another, he has something else he wants to say.
You know, we have had Americans on our team, just for the record. We need Rybakov just so we have somebody without an accent.
That's funny.
Sorry, just something came to my mind that I always remember Roditi for, and would be great if he can explain it a little bit to other, I don't know who's watching, but if there's people in the business world, I think would be great advice. So like all the 4 years I played there, the first 3 years were terrible, like tennis results, and the fourth year was unbelievable. But I remember having Roditi always treat us the same way, the same guys, and it was always the same environment, you know, winning or losing, it was always exactly the same. I remember our third year, it was so bad, and I remember how are we going to get back up, and Roditi will show up the next day like we were just, like we were running for the championship. So I think that's a good quality to, you know, like make sure the people you're leading, they feel the same way when things are going really, really bad and when things are going well. So I guess if you're running a company or whatever, just make sure the people that work for you, they always feel the same way, which is not easy to do, you know, and always it looked like the tougher the things got, the better he, or the more he wanted it. So I don't know if maybe he can share how he did that, or maybe that's his way to do things, but I think that was unbelievable.
I remember that. I remember just those seasons, and it was so tough. And then all of a sudden, you're in the NCAAs, you're in the Final Four, and watching the shift from the hard knocks getting back up.
Yeah, I know. It's also like looking back, it's like, when did I have the most fun? And it had nothing to do with the results. I felt I have the same amount of fun all 3 years, and that's a lot has to do with your coaches. You know, if your coach gets down or doesn't try as hard when things are not going well or treats you bad, then it becomes really tough. So maybe if he can share that with other people.
Thanks.
Well, I thought our last year was more fun.
Yeah, when you at the end of the year, it was more fun.
Competitive guy, very competitive. I think winning, losing, most people would say it's the most important thing for me, and it isn't. It's way up there. But at the end of the day, we're all humans. We're all people. Today I'm his coach. Tomorrow he's my boss, and I think thinking of it, you can think of as a coach, you can think of your players as almost like pieces to get you to a place and to take a step back and know that they're humans and just like us, just like everything, and no matter how bad things are, they're never as bad as you think, and no matter how good things are, they're never as good as you think they are. I believe in that. And for them, what he said, I'm really proud of as a coach that he would say that, because I believe in that. I believe in people first, results, whatever, titles second. I don't know.
That's it. That's it. Thanks, coach. Thanks, Mary.
Thank you, Paco. Thank you.
All right. Well, that was fun. Thanks for being on here. And
thank you, Mary.
Absolutely. And then just, you know, anyone that's listening, just remember that next week on Tuesday, we have Rob Thomason coming on. We would love just to help influence this world, your circle of influence, in a positive way. So if you know people who have a message, who you see as great leaders and mentors in the community, we'd love to put them on. And David, you're amazing, as always.
Thank you, Mary.
I appreciate you.
I hope they take
your heart.
That one thing that they can apply. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate everything you have done for
me. Absolutely. All right. Well, I will say goodbye, and we will talk soon.